there were some of the funny trades in that we had Neuwirth going to the Islanders
for
Chad nothing at all.
So essentially Buffalo traded Neuwirth to the Islanders. For...
Buffalo's goaltenders right now are Anders Lindback and Chad Johnson.
If that was the buying price, I would have been like, throw, give him a second round in Carter Hutton and just give us Neuwirth. That would have been awesome. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Give Rene a break for the rest of the season. Just have him come back for the playoffs.
You know, I mean, Neuwirth's a good goaltender, but I don't trust him as much as you do.
Oh, he's like a, you know, at his best, he's like a .918 kind of goaltender.
Nah, that's better than Hutton's.
That's still better.
.900 or 890.
Yeah, Hutton's had a good season. If he breaks 900. also former national player Marek
Zidlicki.
I'm making fun of the pronunciation thing issues.
Sorry, I didn't pick up on your sarcasm.
That's frequent.
Yeah.
Is now a Red Wing, which is always exciting when a former national player becomes a Red Wing.
Oh, God, everybody becomes a Red Wing at one point in their career. Pecorino will be a Red Wing at
one
point.
Once you're over 35, you're going to become a Red Wing. It's like Medicare.
You're right.
Yeah, welcome back to the show that's happier than ever to see Victor Stahlberg back on the team. This is the Predcast presented by Predatorial.com, brought to you by Lazarin Internet Marketing Solutions. Chris Martell from FoxSports.com is not here. We do have Chris Link from Almost Analysis and myself from OnTheForeCheck.com. I'm Dan Bradley. We're going to be joined later by a mystery guest. We put out a few calls, and hopefully we'll get one or two responses before the end of the show. Other than that, how's your weekend?
It was pretty good. I mean, I wasn't snowed in at any point, which was fantastic. I got a fancy, shiny new computer that I've been wanting for a good amount of time.
Nerd.
So, yeah. So I'm really excited about that. It's way too big and heavy, and it's shiny, and it glows and has fans and buttons, and it's awesome.
You have a Mac and it has fans?
Oh, no. I have my Mac, but the new computer is a PC Windows Tower.
Oh, okay. All right.
It is a monster machine.
I was working at Dell at the time when they first came out with the 720s. This was like that giant case that was like 3 feet off the ground that leaned forward. And you could like buy it from the factory with water cooling systems. This was after Dell brought on Alienware. So you would have like this giant, literally like a 55-pound computer.
Yeah, well, that was the... My tower is it's considered a mid-size case, which means it weighs about 35 to 40 pounds. With components.
Wow.
So, yeah, and that's a mid-size. Some of those alien ones were full-size.
Yeah, I remember when I was working there, we actually had the World of Warcraft-branded computers that would come out.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like these were the computers that they looked like briefcases. They had a handle and everything. So you could bring over to your buddy's house and have a LAN party.
I never got... I had friends who did World of Warcraft LAN stuff, and I didn't get it, because it was at a gaming cafe, so they would spend $15, you know, or whatever, $8 an hour to play a game they pay $15 a month to play.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, granted, I played World of Warcraft for, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years, but I never would pay to play a game that I was paying to play.
No.
That seems a little too much for me.
The lasting memory I have of that machine is this one guy from Georgia calling in. It's like, hey man, has it got them dual graphics cards in it?
Yeah, no.
Actually it does.
Yeah, oh, does it? Did it really?
That's awesome. This is like when NVIDIA had the bridge like technology where you would have two separate graphics cards.
Well, that's still, it's really big now. I mean, yeah. Some people even, I've heard apparently some people are even doing 4 cards running SLI, which is insane.
So imagine in 2008, the uproar this caused.
Oh no, I remember when it came out. I felt, my machine at the time, which died in 2006, 2007, I felt so inadequate with my
crisis kills computers.
With my single graphics card. Of course, I still have a single graphics card.
We're over here talking computer components, and we don't have Martell to talk about with this. I could just see his face lighting up from Disney right now.
Oh yeah, I am completely relearning the language of computer of like Windows hardware, because I've been on a Mac since 2006, a MacBook, and then an iMac.
Yeah.
So I totally don't speak the language anymore. I'm trying to relearn everything, and I'm doing it on Windows 8.1, which is a totally different operating system they've ever used.
I hate it.
Actually, not that bad. I kind of like the swishiness of it all. But I'm not trying to be productive on this thing. This thing is a dedicated. Yeah, I'll show you when we're done. I'll show you the setup real quick. You'll kind of smile.
Cool. One thing that did not make me smile this past week.
Ooh, segues.
This past week, you predicted 3-1. He predicted 2-2. I predicted 2-1-1. Swing and a freaking miss.
You know what I'm going to say about that, Dan?
What's that?
We are optimists. We believe in the team and the coach and things that exist that are joyous and good. And granted, in the past week, those were crushed.
And crushed terribly.
But we still believe, and that's important.
And I look at who they lost to. Only one of these teams is bad. Like, the Devils aren't good. Therefore, they must be bad. Rangers, I think, maybe one of the top two or three teams in the league right now. The Islanders, maybe one of the top four or five teams in the league right now. And the Jets are just my pain in the ass to play against. And so are the Devils at home, too.
Well, the Devils are... I mean, you look at who's behind the bench, you know it's going to be an unpleasant experience.
Yeah, you look at... I mean, it's literally Happy Satan.
That's happy?
Yeah, he's... Lou Lamoriello was Happy Satan. Let's take it from the top. They go to Madison Square Garden and play an absolute dog baby of a game. That was one of the worst games. And we've said this before. Like, this is one of the worst games they've played this year. Again, against the Rangers.
I don't even know where to start with that game.
Shot attempts were bad. I mean, like, Seth Jones, just to pick him out of a crowd, even though he was by far not the worst player in the game, which, you know, you can make an argument. Actually, he may have been one of the worst players. It's like he had like 25% Corsi for that game. It was terrible.
It's like teams, they've watched the footage of the Predators and said, oh, hey, you know, these guys are like schoolyard bullies a little bit. If we push back on them, they're just going to fold. And so all these teams are just pushing back against the Predators and just, you know, shutting them down in all the right locations, making it difficult for them to get into the zone. And then just as soon as they have the puck in the zone, they're on top of them.
Yeah.
They being the opposing team on top of the Predators.
Lots of puck pressure. There's not a whole lot of side-to-side movement. And
yeah, and it's a young team. I mean, the Predators' key players are mostly pretty young. I mean,
with the exception of the center position and three out of four lines, yeah.
But, I mean, yeah. And the guys, I think, who are the veterans, for the most part, tend to be, you know, they tend to be guys who still kind of turn the puck over quite a bit. I mean, Ribeiro can be really good at holding the puck, but, you know, he's going to try really creative, difficult passes, which will result in turnovers. And you have to have guys who are going to hound those pucks, press, and get the puck turned over again, which doesn't happen consistently. Because they know as soon as they turn, the other team knows they turn the puck over, they start charging the defense. Oh, no, it's Seth Jones back there, and there's a 25% chance he's going to trip over his own feet.
Yeah.
And that's not even a joke.
He's middle of a growth spurt right now.
He's
apparently
a baby giraffe out there right now, and I don't know what's going on.
It's bad right now.
I mean, maybe a situation where he's NHL ready, but he could have benefited from playing in the minors for a year or two. But it's just he just looks lost out there.
Yeah. Right now, especially because he's trying to play on his offside alongside Cody Franz, which that happened later on in the week because Ryan Ellis didn't come back until the Islanders game. So the Rangers game, absolutely terrible. So next night, playing against the Devils, absolutely terrible.
That I knew the
game
was terrible.
First period was absolutely terrible, but... Well, you had a feeling if they lost the Rangers game, this game wasn't going to be good either.
Well, you're going in to the Devils' home arena. You're playing on their turf, and they're going to play with the current setup they have, traditional New Jersey Devils-style hockey, which is noted for being the fourth most boring thing on the planet. What do you expect?
I'm sitting here imagining like a Wevels, Wild Devils final, just killing hockey. All this momentum NBC's been building up, it's going to be like a Serie A game of the Wild versus the Devils.
And does it end with one of the teams folding?
Or a gambling scheme? I don't know. That was just I mean, Hutton didn't look bad, but it felt like the Predators, just for the second game in a row, had no answers for how to get into the zone. Just had no answers. And it makes me think again, it has to be fatigue. I refuse to believe anything. I'm just in absolute denial that this team is playing this bad for any other circumstance. Consistently against everybody, they're playing this bad. And it's not just one or two guys. It's everybody.
Maybe. And it's just the thing that's frustrating. You know, because like we were just talking about how the team is fairly young, relatively speaking, and those guys shouldn't be fatigued. Ribeiro doesn't really look all that tired, to be honest.
No, he for what he's doing, I'm impressed. I mean, he's not a guy that I don't like using this phrase hustle. He's not a guy who hustles, but he's not a speed player. Ribeiro's a guy who's going to slow the game down, move chess pieces around, and force the other team into a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of the great playmaking centers, or playmakers in general, they can have long careers. Like, look at Joe Thornton.
That's exactly right.
He can have such a long career because he doesn't have to skate to play his game.
No, he's skinny Joe Thornton in a lot of ways.
I mean, he's just got a point. He's kind of lines the play up and makes an amazing pass that no one else can make, and then someone scores.
He's looking two plays ahead with everybody else.
I mean, I wonder maybe, you know, where I worry about fatigue is on the defense. I worry about the defense getting fatigued because minutes are not very evenly spread.
No.
At all. And I think that's an issue. And also, I am still of the mind that Pekka plays way too many games. I know he wants to play every game, and he's going to, if you ask him, he's like, yeah, I'm good to go. That's what he's going to do. But I still think they overplay him. I thought every year that he's been able to play the full year, he goes really strong, plays every game, either gets injured or just seems to peter out at some point. And I think they're just overplaying him.
Yeah. And
the thing is, you can't put out Hutton and expect to win any night.
No, and I mean, you can't expect it. I mean, like the Buffalo game, you had a good idea he was going to. He didn't lose the Devils game for him.
No, he did not.
I mean, you only allowed
lose it for them.
No. He didn't win it for him, but still, he only allowed two goals against a team that does have some shooters. I mean, I don't know if the guys that scored against him can be classified as shooters. One guy's last name was Jelena, but I mean, it's not like they're rolling out Jaromir Jagr and, you know, all those guys again.
They just really need to, like, next season have, whether it be Mazanek or Hellberg, someone move up.
Someone play 25 games.
Yeah, play 25 games, and if Pekka gets his inevitable injury of the season, play a string of them.
Yeah. It's not asking too much, and I get what they were trying to do. They wanted to protect these guys and protect their development, but the goal of the organization should be win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and if you have three good goaltenders in the pipeline, or three goaltenders with a lot of potential in the pipeline, you're not going to have to play all of those because they're all roughly the same age. So figure out which one you want to develop how and make some decisions and don't just sit on your resources.
Exactly. You're letting the fruit spoil on the vine at this point.
Yes.
They come home, play against the Islanders, and that was a fun game. That was the first time in I can almost say like over a week that hockey was fun.
Yeah, they lost, but they lost playing a good game, and I couldn't be mad about that. And I thought, hey, the team lost, but I think the funk, they're out of the funk. I think they've finally moved past it. That was my feeling coming out of the game because this is two high-quality teams playing good hockey, and one team just was better that night and prevailed.
One goaltender especially was better. Halak was on his game.
Halak is so consistent.
He's consistent. His contract is reasonable. He doesn't make a whole lot of crazy mistakes, and statistically, and just he's a very technical guy, too. Halak is a lot in a lot of ways. I think that if he had been on the right team, we'd be talking about him in the same breath as like a Jonathan Quick, who's a very technically sound goaltender, who's got a little bit more of a meaner streak than Halak, but whatever. But Rinne did not look good. He's kicking out rebounds everywhere. He's not catching pucks like he used to, which I get players are now shooting low on him as opposed to shooting higher on him. But it feels like that he used to snare everything with his glove. His glove would just find it. I don't know if it's pads. I don't know if it's just fatigue. I don't know if it's his mask, which that's some of the other narrative.
A mask.
Well, he does. This has happened. This is not the first time this has happened.
But when does he switch masks? About halfway through the season. When he's already played more games than any other goaltender and more games than some starters are going to play in the league.
This is true.
So
that's very true.
So I think this is one of those correlation causation issues.
And circular logic. Yeah.
I think, Peck has put his new mask on. Now he's going to play poorly. Well, he's also exhausted. And he wasn't playing great before the new mask either.
No, he wasn't really.
I mean, it's one thing that stands out to people. And it drives me a little bit nuts because I have developed this new tradition. And I've had it
sounds
for years.
Exciting.
Before every game, I'll literally sit down and be like, tonight Peck is going to get a shutout, or whoever the goaltender is. And you know what? Sometimes he gets a shutout. Sometimes he doesn't. I actively challenge the superstitions and anything that's goofy. Like, he has a mask. Well, I'm sure he wore it in practice for several weeks before he just started wearing it in games, because goaltenders always break in their pads and their gear. They wear in practice. They'll wear new pads
for
practice.
Not for several weeks. No, not for several weeks, because of all social media, we're able to follow Dave Gunnarsson's work.
So I mean, but he, did Finland. He, was that the first time he wore it? Was in that game?
I don't know if it was the first time he wore it, but he may have worn it maybe like a couple days or so before.
But it wasn't like he put the mask on, took a couple saves, and be like, yep, this isn't working. I can feel the dark magic filling my Finnish veins. Like, I have to go on a pilgrimage to some fjord in Norway and cleanse my soul. I don't think that's realistic. So the whole mask thing, which I'm sure people are half joking about, but then Pekka inevitably switches to his other mask. He switches back, and it's like, oh, everything's better again. But it didn't work still.
True. The Islanders game, I mean, again, the game-winning goal was kicked out on a rebound, much similar to what we'll see later on in the week. But Ryan Ellis comes back. Really missed this kid.
Yeah, he's a difference maker going forward, and he's not that bad going backwards as much. I mean, he's definitely made steps in the right direction. It's taken him some time, but he's done what he needed to do to improve in his own zone.
I mean, paired with Ekholm, it just makes sense. I mean, Ekholm did not work great with Franzen. Ekholm and Jones was passable, but this is a legit second pairing in the NHL. Ryan Ellis and Matthias Ekholm, and look at what their contracts are. I mean, it's really encouraging when you look at just what they can build around here in the future. I mean, I like Seth Jones, and I know the organization likes him more than I do. Cody Franzen, I'm not going to be delusional about him. I think with his contract and how much he's going to command this summer, this is a rental. It really is. I really don't see them signing Franzen long term.
Unless he suddenly comes and takes a homecoming discount or
if
something.
If he does, then Jones will probably be traded. Because I don't see how they'll keep all four guys on the right side.
Well, just think about what Jones's value is after he's had a couple rough seasons. But he's so young.
He's so young, and everybody loves this kid. They may be able to get something good for him, but I mean, I don't see him doing it. I mean, they love Weber so much, they're not going to move him, so just being realistic with it.
No, I mean, I still think there's a ton of value to be had in a Weber trade, but I think given his capabilities and given how much they've already paid him versus what's left on the contract,
I think
it'd be silly. I think there's way more value retaining that contract and keeping Weber for as long as possible than trading him, unless the team has decided, hey, we need to go in a full rebuild, in which case, yeah, set him loose and let him play his game somewhere where he has a chance at a cup, assuming the team hasn't won it. There's a lot of ifs attached to this
line of
thinking.
Like, there's a lot of ifs to that. But Ryan Ellis coming back sets everything good in motion. Now, the Jones-Franzen pairing, as we'll see later in this game and later on in the week, just does not look good as of right now. I mean, there's time for it to get better, but you're asking a lot of Seth Jones, who is still trying to figure out what his role is, because he's had so many different defenseman partners this year. He's played with Bartley, Volchenkov, Ekholm. He played a little bit with Ryan Ellis. Now he's with Cody Franzen. He's had five different partners this year.
I think his best period of time was with Volchenkov, oddly enough.
Yeah.
I mean, Volchenkov is...
Or even Bartley.
Well, I think he's one of those guys who is really good with the eye test. He does all the right things in the ice, but the results aren't that great. Yeah. Whereas Volchenkov is kind of in the same boat, but not quite as down in the possession chart as Bartley tends to be. And he also has the ability to be a bit of an intimidator and a bit of a big force in presence, which has
he doesn't
an advantage.
Have any illusions about his own skills.
Yeah, which
he
frees
knows,
up.
He knows that his job is to watch Seth Jones back.
Yeah, and that frees up Seth Jones to play kind of a young man's game, so to speak. And when he's playing, I mean, Franzen wants to charge forward. Jones wants to charge forward.
They both can't do that.
Bartley wants to charge forward. Someone has to be the Weber on that line, and sit back a little bit, and that was Volchenkov, but I don't know how. I mean, there's enough defensive depth for Laviolette. He's got some difficult decisions, and he's got to decide: do you play the six best defensemen on the team or the six right defensemen on the team? That classic cliche: do you want the right people or the best people? For the position, he's facing the same thing.
I wonder if he'll have enough personal pride to say, you know, Cody Franzen's a good guy, but I liked what I had before better than what I have right now.
Here's the thing to try. Why immediately go after Franzen? Why not scratch Jones and
play
Volchenkov?
Same way. Jones and, I mean, Franzen and Volchenkov, that's a physical pairing right there.
Yeah, and then I think Volchenkov plays, you'd have the same, the right-handed defenseman,
yeah,
right?
You would have perfect matches on both sides, on
yeah,
all three
pairings. Yeah, which the Nationals' obsession with that is even, they don't get any flack for it, because they're not quite as bad at getting the talent they need as, say, like the Red Wings, who are obsessed with right-handed shot defensemen, but can't seem to find any. Yet the Predators are always like, we need to make sure we're balanced. So if we're not balanced, we're going to trade to get balance. And then everything seems to disappear. The second they get a guy, they get have a guy playing in his offhand, it's like, oh no, nothing works anymore. Like, there's only so many right shooting people in the world. Teams have to make it.
Therefore, make the value of Seth Jones must be going through the roof. Just throwing that out there. So they followed up. So Saturday, we were certain that this is the game that they're going to get everything right.
I just thought it was going to be Islanders part two. They're going to come out like in the Islanders game. They're going to play. They're going to play the same level, and they're going to win. Yeah, because they're going to play really well.
I mean, there was no Dustin Byfuglien. Brian Little was out, and I think Trouba was hurt as well. I don't know. Doesn't matter. That game was just
not good.
Dull.
Bad. Terrible.
Incredibly dull.
You notice the game, the games that the Predators have been losing have been really dull. Like, the other team isn't like flashing and like really pushing.
I can count on one hand the games the Predators have lost that have been entertaining. The St. Louis second trip to St. Louis game where the Blues won in like the last 5 minutes on a Stastny tip. That's how vivid I remember it. The Islanders game. This one. I mean, either it's been a blowout or it's been dull. And there's not a whole lot in between. Like, the Rangers game is a blowout. Devils game, dull. Islanders game, fun. Jets game, dull. Just being trapped to death.
Yeah, I know. Crazy, really, these are like modified. These are like, 21st century trap games. These aren't like the trap games from the 90s. Because that just doesn't work because you can't clutch anymore. But it's still all about shunting the shooters in certain directions and frustrating them. And Laviolette, unfortunately, hasn't come up with an answer. And this is where I'm going to get down to something. I don't necessarily know if what we're seeing is a problem with the players. I mean, maybe fatigue. I especially think with Renate's fatigue, but the rest of the team, I'm not as sure on about fatigue.
They've played more games than anybody since the All-Star break.
Yeah, but I don't think that's really the thing. And I just wonder if it's a tactical issue. Because the team is coming in, and it's Admiral. They come in, they play the same game every single night. But I think teams are watching their footage and they're adapting a little bit. I like to see a little bit more of tactical flexibility that's not line switching.
And you say that the only line that's had a major tactical switch to it, as far as who's on the line and it just completely changed the makeup on it, is the fourth line. The fourth line's also been much more effective as far as at least gaining the zone. Season long.
What has something to do with the fact that Nystrom isn't playing that line anymore?
That may have something to do with it. I'm not.
I like everyone's. I like following the Predators Twitter sphere, and people are like, oh man, that what are the Predators are missing is the presence of Eric Nystrom to be an intimidating layup. I'm like, seriously?
Really?
The guy just turns the puck over and skates slow. I mean, at this point, I prefer Gostad to Nystrom, and I don't know if I would have said that beginning of the year, because for some reason, I think Nystrom does well with the youth around him. He doesn't have to skate quite as hard, so he can trail the play as he needs to. Sometimes he can get free and gets the puck way up the ice, and then you've got this giant body just bearing down through the middle of the ice, and you're not going to knock him off the puck because he's huge.
Yeah.
So
I think with Beck and Bork, though, I like that fourth line a lot better than I did before.
Yeah, I mean, that's a luxury fourth line. I mean Gostad, Beck, and Bork on as your fourth line, that's a nice fourth line.
You got speed, you got a little bit of power, both Beck and Bork can shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, both of them against the Islanders, Beck should have had a goal. Bork nearly had one. Beck's clanged off the post. Bork's, I believe, actually just ricocheted off a part of Halak. Now the Jets game, it sounds a lot similar to the Islanders in this sense that they kept pushing, they struggled. They did allow the first goal in all four of these games, but the Jets game was the first game they did not allow the first two goals this week. They tied it up, but seconds later, the puck ricochets off Rene's pad right into Blake Wheeler, who slots it home.
That
was so depressing.
But the thing about it is that's such a tricky thing to happen. From the side the shooter came in on, to get it off that far pad and for it to bounce directly to a Jets player who's in perfect position, I mean, that's a sequence of events that you can't plan. That's the randomness of hockey. And it was huge heads up. Who scored the
Blake Wheeler.
Blake Wheeler.
Is a good player, and he's not – I mean, we've made this before when when Craig Button was trashing Carter Hutton. I said that Alex Ovechkin is one of the players that you have to know where he is on the ice. Blake Wheeler is not in Alex Ovechkin's category, but he's one of the few guys that Winnipeg has that can really hurt you. Blake Wheeler is on that list. You have to know where he is on the ice, because we've seen him in the Olympics just skating laps around the nets just because no one can get the puck off the guy.
Yeah.
And of who they had left on that roster, Wheeler's the guy you had to watch for. The fact that Rene's rebound control again is an issue, and Pekka took this loss apparently pretty hard if you read some of the locker room interviews with it. So I don't want to shovel the dirt, because again the offense only scored one goal. So you can't mean Hutchison played good, but it just felt like more times than not they're not shooting it on net. That's the most frustrating thing. They're generating the attempts, but it's like instead of making the goaltender make a save like they were earlier in the year, they're shooting them wide, shooting it high, getting it blocked, and it's not even getting to the net.
I was definitely listening to you.
I know you were.
But I was pulling up some numbers, okay? Because I pointed this out on Twitter, but I wanted to bring it up again here, and I don't remember if I brought it up last week. So if I have,
Me. I don't think you did.
So looking back to that first Islanders game
the beatdown
mid-February, or towards the end of February, 19.
5-2 game?
Yeah. So I'm going to invoke the word of PDO, okay? So I'm just going to read up this list of the PDOs from that game to now. 96.6, 105.4 against Philadelphia, 91.7, 105.5, that was the shellacking of Colorado, and then 96.3, 96.6, 96, 98.8, 96.6, 96.3. Everything is going, the Predators, not only is Pekka not stopping anything, but the team can't, their shooting percentage is really low across the board. It's crazy. They had one game, the Islanders, that we said was a good game. The save percentage was pretty weak, 87%, but the shooting percentage was 9.7.
I'll give them this too. If there's a trend here, they did play against Dubnyk, the Detroit goalie. That was Gustafson. Gustafson's had a better year, but he's not Jimmy Howard. Henrik Lundqvist, Corey Schneider, Yaroslav Halak, and Michael Hutchinson.
Yeah, it's also a good.
That's a pretty good set of goalies, with the exception of Hutchinson.
But then, how many goals? What's their?
Hutchinson's having a great season. I don't put him in that category of like a great goalie or anything, because this is his rookie year essentially.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of these games, they dominate a lot of aspects of the game. You look at that, like the Islanders game, they dominated possession.
The Devils game after the first period, they came possession. Back the last two periods.
They were even against Detroit for possession. The Rangers was just we agree that was a bad
that
game.
That was terrible.
The Buffalo, that weird Buffalo game that they lost.
No, they won the Buffalo game. They won in the shootout, remember? They just outshot them.
Sorry, I see right here. It says goals 4-0, goals against 1. Oh, you know what? That's because I'm looking
even
at...
Even strength.
I'm looking at even strength. Yeah, I forgot I didn't change that.
You're on war on ice.
It defaults, I know. But even strength, well, because what I'm talking about, even strength was the right thing. But as far as the... Yeah, but it's just, it's a mess.
Yeah, it's absolutely a mess. When you're watching the Jets game, have you ever seen a team try to kill its own goaltender and by using the other team as a weapon?
That was brutal.
That was brutal.
Brutal.
Gabby Bork, I thought, had a concussion there for a minute or two. Getting a shot in the back of the head and then caroming into Hutchinson.
I don't know what the deal with them. Predators into Hutchinson was. Maybe they're like, guys, we got to turn things around. We got to get Pavlich back out here. Disable Hutchinson by any means possible. I half expected Tutu to come flying out of the side, just tackle him.
I love Lavi's reaction to the Smith penalty, which ended up yielding a goal. But
is that that was the ridiculous penalty? Wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the ridiculous penalty.
That was the one that made no sense.
Yeah,
yeah. Lavi lets.
That was when the Smith got punched in the back of the head, and then it caromed into Hutchinson. And...
Yeah, that was the first one. Yeah, that was no good. That was a bad call.
That was pretty rotten.
It was very clearly a bad call. Yeah, and it hurt. And you're right. Yeah, they scored a goal.
Yeah, it hurt him.
And it killed him.
So several times now, the Predators have pulled the goaltender with 2 or 3 minutes remaining, and on teams that they've failed to get in the zone against.
I think that's fine. I think it motivates the team a little bit to know there's no one back there, and I think they recognize that they don't want to go to overtime. So you need time to, one, get 6 guys out there, score a goal, and then try to take that momentum and score another goal and win the game in regulation. I want to say that's the plan. Obviously, it hasn't worked particularly well, but they're trying, and it's not like Patrick Waugh style of pulling the goaltender to start the game.
power play with 10 minutes remaining in the first, down 1-0. Yeah, we're going to pull the goaltender.
Yeah, we haven't quite reached that level of crazy. But
day ain't over yet. All right. Anything else you want to take out of this week? Just
please, I don't really know.
I kind of want to turn the page and just be like, you know, just look down at it.
I want to rip the page out of the book and burn it.
Just crumple it up and toss it aside. All right, then. Well, fine. We'll move on to the next week and move into – we got some stuff going around the league. We got – let's see. Ryan Ellis coming back. We're going to talk about defensive pairings. We're going to talk about the top two lines. You know what? Let's just go and get into that real quick. Top two lines as of right now are – let's see if this serves me correct. I got Smith, Ribeiro, Forsberg on the top line. On the second line we have as of right now, Colin Wilson, Mike Fisher, and James Neal. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that Neal is? I mean, was they started the season? Neal was on the top line. Fisher was hurt, so we got to take that out of the equation. When Neal came back from injury, and when Fisher was already in the lineup, they moved Fisher with Neal, and Fisher was shooting at the time, like I believe, like 20% or something, even strength. It was 20% overall, which he has a high shooting percentage. Mike Fisher has one of the higher active shooting percentages. Actually, so does Mike Ribeiro. Since then, Fisher's kind of cooled off a little bit. I mean, he's still playing some good games. He's still putting in good minutes. I just really don't see James Neal being best served on that line.
No, there's no one to play him the puck. There really isn't. I mean, Colin Wilson,
he's a drive-the-net player.
Can distribute to a degree, but he's more of, I'm going to hold the puck for as long as possible, get to somebody who can do something, and then that we'll see where it takes from there. One thing I'd love to do is to take Colin Wilson data from the season and see if, like, his number of primary versus secondary assists. But, I mean, mostly he wants to get the puck to someone in a very simple, clean pass and then get in a position where he can score. And then Mike Fisher is kind of doing the same thing with net presence. And so that leaves Neal by himself a little bit, or the guy who has to try to make the play, which is not his role.
No, he's a guy who's going to camp out. He's the camper in Halo. He's gonna hang around a part of the map and just wait for the opportunity and just pick a crossbar.
So the thing about that whole line and especially talking about Wilson is my favorite pairing, and I've been a proponent of this for I want to say 3 years now, really strongly last year, is that I love to see Wilson and Craig Smith playing together. They have some great chemistry. And they both drive play, and they do a lot of they just click together because Smith can do more than just shoot. He's not a pure shooter necessarily.
And Wilson can do more than just pass, so but he's not a pure passer.
Yeah, so they kind of just click together like a couple Legos.
Yeah. Yeah, they really do, and they both have some college hockey experience for whatever that's worth. They're both you don't see them out of position too often, and. Frankly, I just think that Ribeiro works better with Neal in the sense that Ribeiro is going to do something crazy and create a distraction, and magically the puck's just going to find Neal for a hashtag heroic James Neal goal.
Yeah.
And then Philip Forsberg can just kind of do whatever he wants to.
Yeah, Philip Forsberg is sort of the wild card in the line. He can just, you give him the puck, he's going to do something cool, and it may result in a goal, or it may result in a scoring chance, or it may result in him getting a goal by developing a play.
But without Neal on the ice, though, it feels like everybody zeroes in on Forsberg, and he's not able to do as much. He doesn't have near as much space to work with. I'd argue that I bet his production is down significantly away from James Neal.
I wouldn't be surprised. But that's another thing I really like about teams. When you have distractions, that's one thing I really like about Colin Wilson. He's a massive distraction. He makes it so you cannot ignore him.
No.
Because if you ignore him, he's going to burn you. If you double team him or something like that, he's going to fight and push his way through, or he's going to get the puck to somebody who's open now.
Or at the very worst, he'll do his self chip and chase thing, which is actually looking more promising this year than in past years.
Yeah.
it still drives me crazy.
Yeah,
I
think Forsberg eventually will find a way to overcome the kind of the crowding that he gets right now. I mean, he's shown flashes of where he'll put the puck off the wall and get between two guys or get around one guy and keep going. I think he's going to keep developing that sort of skill at the NHL level, and that's going to mean that he's going to be able to free himself up. So this problem he's facing right now, getting shut down, he may alleviate himself, or he needs to learn to alleviate himself, because it's not going to happen for him, barring a bigger threat in the other wing or another threat in the other wing being James Neal.
Yeah, James Neal. Or what about even Colin Wilson?
Yeah, but then I can't have Colin Wilson and Craig Smith playing together, Dan.
Stop. Unless they move Wilson to center, which that's never going to happen, apparently.
Yeah, could you?
A drum that I keep beating, too, because I want to see Colin Wilson at center again.
Now I'm picturing Forsberg, Wilson, and Smith as a line, and that's just nutty.
That's just fun.
That's a power play line that I want to see.
And then that frees up Ribeiro and Neal to play together. With, you know, throw whoever you want on there. Santarelli, cool. Matt Cullen, fine.
I can't. Santarelli's been so close to some great goals since he came over.
He's the new Colin Wilson.
Well, he's not. I don't think he's not. He's expected to be a third, fourth liner.
Yeah,
third
liner. Yeah,
I mean, he's a great third liner to have on your team, to be honest.
Yeah, we didn't know what we had in this guy. When he left Nashville, there was no, like, man, we're not going to miss him.
Well, that's happening with a few guys. And if it hadn't been for injury, I think he might have stuck around. But he had a rough time of it.
Yeah.
The expectations for him were not what his game happens to be.
He was also really good in the shootouts, too, which people fall in love with that stuff. They really do. All right, so coming up after the break, we're going to look at some around the NHL news, get deeper into the going-ons with the team, look what we look forward to next week, and also mystery guest right here on the podcast presented by Lion's Own Internet Marketing Solutions.
These days, you need a partner current and latest website design standards, one that also provides quality support services like hosting, email, e-commerce, CMS, and more. And you need a partner experienced in online branding and marketing, like social media, search engine marketing, rich media, and email marketing. You need a partner that knows how to market your company in today's age of advertising. You need Lion's Own. Their professional staff and partners have the know-how, creativity, and experience to help you reach your marketing goals. Contact them today for a free consultation at 615-353-0402. That number again is 615-353-0402. Or you can reach them on their website at www.lionzone.com. Lion's Own, Nashville's leading internet marketing agency since 1999.
Welcome back in. Our guest is on the line, and you would have met that guest by the music, but we actually have John Garcia from ontheforecheck.com, my boss, on the line. John, how are you this evening?
I'm doing just fantastic. I've got the coffee ready. I am ready to go. How are you guys doing?
Doing okay. Are the Caps playing tonight?
They are not playing tonight. They don't play again until Wednesday.
Oh, look. They have more than 2 days off in a row.
They have. They've had a lot. They've had a couple where they've got like four. I think there's one where they even had 5 days in a row. So their schedule has definitely been beneficial rather than, you know, what we've seen recently with Nashville, where they've only gotten, I think, at most 2 days in a row.
They've gotten 2 days in a row. This will be their second time coming up this week. Their second time since the All-Star break.
Yeah, it was second time in a month, too, because I want to say that the last two-day break that they had was at the very beginning of February, was it not?
Yeah, it was in the middle of February. Since the break, that was the only two-day breaks they've had.
But they also have another set of back-to-backs coming up. I think they've got two this month, which is going to be brutal for them as well.
Correct.
At this rate, I think the Predators are going to finish the season about 2 weeks before any other team, and they're just going to have some time off with the playoffs.
Oh, April is just going to be like a golf trip. They only play like, what, three or four games in April, whereas the Blues play like eight?
Yeah, four games.
Yeah, so at least they'll be rested for hopefully later April adventures.
Assuming they don't just lose out the season.
That too. Before the break, Chris and I were ruminating about the top line. I know you have opinions on this too, because earlier today you posted the new Wowie tool that Hockey Analytics has up. We had a little bit of a discussion about this earlier between you and I about Craig Smith versus James Neal on the top line. So you're in the camp that James Neal should be on the top line ahead of Craig Smith just because of Neal's chemistry with Ribeiro, Smith's chemistry with Wilson, or just the numbers are just too good to deny.
A little bit of both. I think, honestly, if you put Craig Smith on the top line or James Neal on the top line, you're going to have success. However, when you're looking purely at a statistical standpoint, the top line does better when James Neal is on the wing rather than with Craig Smith. But when you're looking at it, it's a little bit negligible, because I think of the three combined, we're looking at just Philip Forsberg, Mike Ribeiro, and either James Neal or Craig Smith. With Craig Smith, I want to say that they're about a 56% Corsi 4 total, whereas with James Neal, they're about at a 58. So both of those numbers are still supremely good, but obviously you have to look at that little extra bit of juice with James Neal. And I think that the chemistry that they had at the very beginning of the season with Ribeiro, Forsberg, and Neal kind of speaks for itself. I mean, for the better part of a month, month and a half, they were the only line that was scoring pretty much. Whereas now with Craig Smith, again, he hasn't done terrible on the top line, but they've just started to fade a little bit. But again, you could also say that the whole team has started to fade a little bit.
By putting Neal up into that first line, you put back together my dream pairing of Wilson and Smith. I mean, how do you feel about those guys getting regular minutes together rather than splitting them up like they are now?
I thought in training camp, the Wilson and Smith together looked like some of the best pairing of forwards that you can possibly put in. Didn't really matter who was between them, but now you've got Mike Fisher, who's back, who's been pretty much clicking on all cylinders since his return. And again, if you put in those three forwards, Colin Wilson, Mike Fisher, Craig Smith, they're doing just about the same when you've got a whole group together of they're sending 56% of the shots towards the opposing netminder when those three are on the ice. So I think that kind of speaks for itself as well. And it spreads it out a little bit because you've got Forsberg, Ribeiro, Neal on the top line, and then a great chemistry line of Wilson, Fisher, and Smith on the line, and then you can pretty much do whatever you want with the third line, and then the fourth line's pretty much been set in stone depending on who's healthy all season.
Victor Stahlberg being called back up, which means another plane ride for him, but also we now have an extra piece somewhere. Who do you think's going to be sitting in his place now that is it Cali Yarncroke, who has had good games and bad games, but you also have Matt Cullen, who's had more bad games than good games, but Matt Cullen's been hot as of late.
And that's kind of where the distinction is drawn right now, because if you had asked me maybe about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, I probably would have said Matt Cullen should probably sit in the press box for a little bit. I thought that most of this season, it looks like the game has kind of passed him by. But he's kind of found that extra jump in his step the past couple of weeks to where he has been playing really great. Granted, he's been buoyed by a very high shooting percentage, which is going to crash and come down eventually. But, I mean, if you're Laviolette at this point right now, you want to play the hot hand. So I could see them taking out Cali Yarncroke for a little bit because he has been a healthy scratch within the past couple of games. So you take him out and maybe see how the line works with Victor Stahlberg, Santorelli, and Cullen, because both Cullen or Santorelli could reasonably center that line. And then you just kind of see what works. I mean, I think Stahlberg does deserve a little bit of time to kind of gel with some line mates, because he hasn't really gotten that all season. He's only played 11 games, and I think at the most he's played 5 games in a stretch of time, which isn't really a whole lot to judge his performance on, even though I know he is a little bit divisive in the Predators fan base right now.
I wonder with the Stahlberg call-up, you know, has there been a very quiet injury? Not a major injury, but enough to keep someone out of the lineup for a game? Or is this purely a, hey, we happen to have a very effective NHL or NHLer sitting in the AHL right now. Let's scare the pants off of some of the forwards.
Yeah, I guess it would be hard to tell, you know, without being in the room all the time and not knowing what's going on behind the scenes. We can't, you know, we can speculate all we want about injuries, but that's hearsay. It could be that with your other point as it were, because he's been tearing it up in the AHL for the most part. I mean, he's
two
scoring overtime winners. He's got two hat tricks from what we've been hearing from our associates down at Admirals Roundtable. His attitude has been very great, which you think someone who's making, you know, about $3.5 million to play in the NHL, who's playing in the AHL, you think that, okay, you know, if he's a little bit, you know, sour, then maybe you don't hold it against him. But apparently he's been nothing but had a positive attitude. since he's been down there. And he's a really good complementary player. I mean, he's not – look, he was brought in and he was sold as a scoring first-line winger, and that is just not his game. It never was. Even when he was playing with the Blackhawks, that's not who he is. But if you put him on the third line, if you give him a much smaller role on the team, he could reasonably do great things. And if you look at the numbers that he's had throughout his career, they speak to being able to do that. So I think that it's more along the lines of having that extra piece in there, especially right now when the team needs all the help that it could possibly get. You throw him in there, see what works, and see what brings him out of the slump.
You know, the whole Stalker situation makes you think of, and John, you may respond to this as being a legacy Capitals fan. He's sort of like the inverse of the famous AHLer Alexander Giroux, who's one of my favorites of all time. Who
little tiny Andrew, I know.
Yeah, you know, because Stahlberg, he can skate like the wind, but he has no hands. Whereas Giroux had amazing hands, but could not, like, he just couldn't skate with the big boys. But so but you put him in the AHL and they just do amazing things. But you step it up and all of a sudden their game just fades rapidly.
Yeah, and I think that also, I mean, I don't know if that had anything to do with Giroux's size or not, but there, I mean, you know, you have your classic tweeners. I don't think that Stahlberg is really that much of a tweener. I just think that he doesn't have that much finish. I mean, we know plenty of skaters out there who are great skaters, just don't have very good hands, but they can still hack it in the NHL, good for, you know, 10 goals a season or something like that. Whereas Giroux, he would light it up down when he was playing. Like, even in Hershey, when they won a couple of Calder Cups, he was scoring, what, 80 points a season or something 50, like that?
Like 40, 50 goal. Like, I think he had a 60-goal season or something. I don't know you know this, John, but I grew up watching the Hershey Bears when they were still the Flyers farm team.
Oh, wow.
And so that was the first hockey I ever got to watch. So I've always been a bit of a closet Hershey Bears fan.
And
I think my internet went out, but all of a sudden I was talking and then it told me that on until I was talking about Giroux scoring a bunch of points in the AHL but not being able to hack it in the NHL.
All right. Move on to some NHL news then. All right.
We're going.
All right. All right, so big news that came across the wire today is that Vegas is getting closer. I know we've discussed a little bit on this on our own side, but how rampantly for Las Vegas team are you guys, both of you?
I don't care, frankly, about a fake team in Vegas. I think there's a lot better markets.
Yeah, I mean, I'm indifferent. I mean, I think it would be cool to have it there. I'm not as rampant as some other people. I would like to see an expansion team in Vegas, I suppose. But, you know, I'm not one of those people that's gung-ho. My God, we need to get there. I'm going to spend all my money to go out there and go see the team. And then, you know, also maybe watch some hockey as well.
We already have that in Nashville.
Yeah.
Especially from the Midwest.
Yeah. I'm more excited about how they announce the team, which I don't remember who said it, but they threw out the idea that the announcement could take place at the NHL Awards in Vegas. And I just wonder how you get Bettman and some C-level celebrity up there at the same time to announce the Vegas franchise. I just wonder who that celebrity would be. I mean, I think they've run a bit thin on David. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name, which is like Bornea or whatever it is. I think they've run him thin, and they got to get clever.
It can't be worse than their musical acts they select. Can't be worse. I mean, I'm sure you were beaming with pride when Lee Greenwood was at the Washington Winter Classic.
I muted it. I didn't even watch that.
Did he sing another song?
I can't answer that because I didn't watch.
I think the best musical act they've had in the past several years, oddly enough, I think was Drake they had several years ago. And that was actually, like, a decent show. Like, whether music aside, it was actually a good, like, performance-wise, it was lively, at least.
Give me the California Stadium Series with Kiss. Yes, I know it's not even really Kiss, but if you're going to just be, like, just the complete counterculture to everything.
The stage winter in the middle of the field where no one was nearby was the awkwardest thing
ever.
Well,
that also produced the very best picture that I've ever seen with that fisheye angle picture of Gene Simmons licking Gary Bettman's head.
That is a classic. Instant classic.
As of right now, going on actually on the ice, Devin Dubnyk is the absolute destroyer of worlds. He's Galactus right now in hockey form. From your own experience, and I know we've seen goaltenders come and go with this, just go on these hot runs. Roman Turek comes to mind, who just completely come out of the blue. Jim Carrey, John Casey. Who would you liken this to, and how long can Devin Dubnyk keep this up?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
Anyone who has an answer, I have no answers.
I have no answers for this.
For the first part of your question, I don't know who you would liken this to. Can he keep it up? Yes, but not as great as he's been doing right now. I've read a bunch of the articles on the head tracking that he's been doing. So I think that it's more than just, you know, great numbers and a bunch of luck that he's been running into. I actually think that he's changed his game in a way that's advantageous to who he is as a goaltender. And he's never really been, you know, terrible. Like, even when he was playing with the Oilers, he had okay numbers for being on such a bad team, which when he was traded with to Nashville, I remember saying that, you know, it's a win-win situation. They got rid of Matt Hendrick's contract and they don't have a whole lot coming back. And if Dubnyk is great, then he's great. And if not, then not really a big chip off their shoulders. Obviously, we know that it didn't work out, but I'm waiting for that Dubnyk regression of 2015. I think that it's going to come. I don't think it's going to be as stark as some people make it out to be, because the Wild are a really good team in front of him, which is different than, you know, Semyon Varlamov last season, you know, putting up these amazing numbers, but, you know, taking 50 shots a night. Wild are really good at suppressing shots, and they're really good at keeping the opposition to the perimeter, and he's really good at stopping the puck. So I think it's a really good set of two things right there, where that you've got two good situations.
You're the numbers guy. You have any answers
for
Devan Dubnyk?
Here's the thing. I'm not. There are very few people who are qualified to talk about numbers and goaltenders. I am not one of those people, because measuring goaltender performance in a quantitative manner is still kind of like a black box.
Yeah.
There's people who are very, very smart people. People who are really inventive and far smarter than I am when it comes to statistics. Are working on this to get an answer, but it's not there yet. And right now, all that matters is Dubnyk goes out there and just stops whatever comes towards him. And it works for Mike Yeo, because the best way to keep the library quiet is to keep everyone out of the library.
That's smart.
And Yeo likes a quiet library.
And it doesn't matter how many millions these guys are getting paid in front of Devan Dubnyk, they all have the same job of keeping people out of the library. Thomas Vanek, block shots. Mikko Koivu, well, you just be Mikko Koivu. Jason Pominville, if you want another freaking paycheck in your life, we're going to block the shot. So they get everybody's buy-in with the Wild, and it's frustrating because I just hate them so much. Other goalie news, the Florida Panthers are having a contest to be the practice backup goaltender, making light of a situation that was absolutely hilarious in Sunrise against the Maple Leafs, and a game that was very important, mind you. So they're chasing down the Bruins for this playoff spot. Luongo gets hurt. Al Montoya comes in. He gets hurt. Luongo shows up on the bench in his street clothes and his purple tie and white shirt. He ends up putting the pads on and going back in there. So in that case, who would the Predators use? They would use Vanderklok, or who would they? How would that work for Nashville? Just Vanderklok or no one else? Or
is there anyone in the organization that plays goaltender at like a collegiate or semi-professional level?
Vanderklok played in college. I know that much.
Another thing is, I can't remember who he was. There was a guy last who I've seen a guy who has some experience who they like profiled once very briefly. I don't really know who that would be. I don't know who in Nashville would fill that spot.
Yeah, I mean you would think that, I mean, because Vanderklok's not very old, so you'd think that maybe that would be their first go to, but. I really don't know.
My vote, if I had a personal vote for someone to step in out of the darkness and play goal for the Predators, I'm going to go for JP Dumont, as I always do.
Dumont, yeah.
Granted, I was, like many others, when Vokoun was in town, being like, maybe a goaltender will have to go out of the game and Vokoun will have to put the pads on, sit in the bench. Come on, make it happen.
Him during the intermission was hilarious. Did you guys see that? I think it was the Islanders game.
It was the Islanders game, because I was at the Islanders game.
It was on TV. It was the Detroit game. That's what it was. He was he did like the intermission interview with Mark Howard, and he's still as precious as it gets. All right, five tough questions. We do this every week, and this is our forge of hot takes, as we like to call it. Going a little bit around the league here. Number one, now that we've had a chance to view every team's new acquisitions from the trade deadline. What team in the Central did the best of the deadline as far as addressing their needs? I'm going to start with you, John.
I don't think that you can argue with what St. Louis is doing right now. They brought in a bunch of basically like reserve players, right? Because they're already good enough to be competing for the Central title. And then when they get Shattenkirk back, that's going to be an even bigger boost for them. But also, I mean, I think that you can look at Chicago as well. I mean, I don't think anyone saw them bringing in Kimo Thiemann in. They gave up a first rounder for Anton Vermette, which is way too much of an overpayment, but I mean, they're working it right now.
I mean Chicago is definitely one thing that bringing in pieces. I like subtle moves at the trade deadline, mixed, you know, you have some splashy, but I kind of like what the Jets did, which I can just feel my insides cringing as I say that. But
are you talking about with the bringing in Myers?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. But then they also just kind of did a lot of little small things.
Yuri Tlusti.
Yeah, Yuri Tlusti is a good player. They got Lee Stepniak. Stepniak, jeez, I stumbled over that. So I mean, those are good. Those are a pair of good, solid moves combined with the Tyler Myers trade.
Actually, the Myers trade was part of the Evander Kane and Stafford. Swap with Bogosian. Funny story about Lee Stepniak. To make it full circle about how bad the Leafs are, guess who the Leafs traded for Stepniak with assets including Alex Steen of the Blues. Just, you know, he's a 40-goal guy. I would have went with the Wild because the Wild needed another guy to kind of fill their role. And Sean Bergenheim they got for nothing, for scraps.
That was a great pickup.
Good pickup. Jordan Leopold, another guy. Their defense is just... it's so top heavy. It's hilarious. Jordan Leopold's not a bad guy to pick up. And then Chris Stewart, who I'm told is a hockey player. Also,
speaking of Chris Stewart, did you see the goal that he scored against the Avalanche over the weekend?
No.
So basically, the Avalanche were winning 3-0. It was the very end of the third period. He dumps the puck into the zone. It bounces off the boards and it comes right back to him. And he like goes for the one timer and completely misses it. And then it goes off one of the Avalanche players' skates and into the net. That was his first goal as a Wild.
That's very fitting. Very fitting. Number two, with the Central essentially being now a dead heat with the Blues and the Predators, and then you have Chicago, who's kind of stuck in neutral, but they are still gathering points. At least when they lose, they get points. It's weird how that works. Who would be the worst potential matchup for the Predators other than the obvious Los Angeles Kings?
I think I may, as much as I kind of want to say Chicago, I think the worst matchup for them right now would be the Minnesota Wild. We saw it here last week where the Predators just could not do anything. The Wild were playing their trap game, their boring, frustrating game, standing them up at the blue line. And it took, almost all of the game for the Predators to start mounting an attack. And even when they were getting shots on Devan Dubnyk, they weren't good shots. They weren't quality scoring chances. And I think that if you look at that over an entire, seven-game series, that scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, you can't argue with that. I mean, the Wild are boring and scary, which is a strange, uncomfortable combination. Granted, the record isn't quite there, but I'm also maybe a little bit more worried about Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I just feel like they are the Wolfsbane to the Nashville Predators, somewhere deep inside.
You look at what they did just last week, and they frustrated them again. Granted, when we're talking about, you know, Minnesota frustrating Nashville and Winnipeg frustrating Nashville, I mean, the Predators were and are at the lowest of the low at that point. But, I mean, you think of what they did, and that was without Bufflin, that was without Brian Little, you know, that was without Matthew Perreault, like all the guys they've used all season to get them to where they are. And just seeing that again is just so frustrating that you think that, wow, you know, at the beginning of the season, I almost would have preferred to play the Jets, but now, I don't know.
No, being season, you hands down would play the Jets. You just light up Pavlik, and the rest team's a bit of a mess, but they've coalesced into a good hockey team with Hutchinson behind them.
Agreed. Number three, let's make some enemies here. Which player is more worthy of the Calder Trophy this year, Philip Forsberg or Aaron Ekblad?
So I'm going to go with Philip Forsberg. However, if Aaron Ekblad does win, I would not be surprised and I would not cause a fuss. Yes, it's been great what Philip Forsberg has done. I mean, especially in the scope of rookies in Nashville, he's far and away been the best that they've ever seen. He's tailed off a little bit in the past couple weeks, which I don't think hurts, I don't think helps his case. And then you look at what Ekblad is doing. I mean, he's only 18 years old. This is his first season. He's playing against top competition. He's playing heavy minutes. And he's he's getting points and he's getting assists. He's, you know, a big part of their power play. And again, he's only 18 years old. I mean, that's insane for a 18-year-old defenseman to come in and be such a big part of a team's offense and be such a big part of the team in general, especially because they're fighting for a playoff spot, and no one thought that they were going to be doing that this year.
I think I'd also go with Forsberg, and that's in the if I look at the greater context of the two situations. You have Ekblad in Florida, it was put in a very low pressure system. I mean, no one really had. They had expectations that the team would be a hockey team, and that was about it. The fact that they may make the playoffs is actually a huge accomplishment, because they weren't built to make the playoffs. They were built to chug along and be an engine, sort of like some of the Predators teams of the past that still managed to scrape in, but they were just hockey engines. Like, they produce hockey night in and night out and hope people watch and pay for it. And also, it's out east, where the competition is not nearly as stiff. I mean, the East is still a weaker conference than the West, and so, you know, is that going a little bit? Am I getting a little too chintzy with it and being like, "Oh, the East isn't as bad"? Maybe, but then you look at the flip side. You look at Forsberg, who's in a very high pressure situation. I mean, there's expectations after 2 years of not missing the playoffs, lots of changes, brand new coach and everything coming in. You know, the whole arena opening up to new attractions and all this kind of change. There's a lot of excitement, a lot of expectations, and he's a big part of having to fulfill those expectations. So, and he's been pretty successful in that, and he's been doing it against West Conference competition, which is pretty elite across the board, but even the terrible teams are for some reason really good. Defying all expectation, you've got Calgary still not even in a wild card spot, and it's Calgary, and they're awful.
And you have the Kings, who are still out of a wild card spot.
Yeah,
right,
and the Kings,
now,
who are chasing Winnipeg of all teams by 3 points. I mean, it's insane. You don't get that in the East.
And you also have to look at how, I mean, even though I mentioned that he's tailed off recently, you have to think about how long through the season that he kept his point streak going, and he kept scoring, he kept assisting on goals, and just being a major, major, major part of the team.
I think if he gets hot, I would be more inclined to say yes. As of right now, Ekblad is coming on at the right time, and I think Ekblad right now, his numbers are nearly historic for a rookie, let alone for an 18-year-old rookie. I mean, he's playing alongside Brian Campbell. Brian Campbell's a good defender. He's nothing to write home about. I'd put him on par with maybe a Mike Ribeiro, maybe a little bit lower than that. And from what he's doing in Florida with a team that's not near as good as what Nashville is, and don't look now, but the Atlantic, but their division is no joke. The top half of the division with Tampa, Detroit, Boston's not terrible, Montreal, well, it's Carey Price and friends. That's not bad. So I would actually be inclined to say Ekblad, as much as it hurts me, but there's still plenty of time for that wrong.
It's also Nashville, so the team is never going to win anything.
Well, the question is, who is more worthy? Not who is going to win, but who is more worthy of it?
Well, here's the question, too, is I think we've all got it figured out, and everyone's got it figured out, that it's going to be Forsberg, Ekblad there at the top. Who's going to be that third rookie that gets in there for the nomination?
Danny Heatley.
The guy from Ottawa.
Mike Green? Hoffman?
Yeah, Hoffman, yeah.
Yeah. I would also say that maybe Michael Hutchinson might deserve a little bit of a nod over there, coming in and playing goal for Winnipeg.
I don't understand why more people aren't talking about him. I don't. The narrative's just not there, I guess. Narrative is undefeated. Number four, how many games will Carter Hutton play by the remainder of this season?
Let me get a quick gander at the schedule over here, because they've got a couple of back-to-backs coming up. I would imagine that he would play this weekend, depending on how things are going. Unless if they're losing, then Pekka's playing all of them. There's no way that Carter's getting in if Pekka's losing.
I'm just going to say three real quick and just get it out of the way. I'm going to go with three games.
Masochist.
They've got 15 left, so I think that would probably go around with about what he's doing. I would be surprised if he got 4 or 5. I would be surprised. I could see 4, but I would, especially if they want to rest Rene for the playoffs, maybe have cut and play the last, like, you know, 1 or 2 games. But I would be surprised if it's any more than that.
They need to send Rene to a 2-week relaxation spa somewhere far away from Nashville.
They just need to send him, like, to, they need to bring, like, an oxygen chamber on the road with him. And, I mean, I know NFL players will do this. Like, the night before, like, 2 nights before the game, they'll sleep in an oxygen chamber. He took an IV during the playoff series against Detroit. And that's probably the reason why he was able to keep going the way this current tilt. But
how many games did he play that year?
It was a big number.
It was close to 60, wasn't it?
That team, as good as their record indicated, was not as good as their record indicated by any means. Their underlying numbers were terrible. I'm amazed they beat Detroit that year. But cool for them.
But they did it with good grit and hard work and...
Go to hell, Chris.
Spit shine and whatever Barry Trotz brews in his basement.
Whatever. So, fun question. Number 5. This current losing streak. Now currently I have, 6 games? What is the lowest moment, like singular moment during the game of this losing streak?
Man, you're going to have to make me dig up some bad memories. I've done a pretty good job of shutting everything out that we've seen over the past 2 weeks. Oh, man. Man, I just hit a blank. I would probably say going into the game against the Devils and promptly giving up 2 goals. And then they mounted a huge comeback and tried to play like crazy afterwards, and then it just didn't happen. And then they played like they played their hearts out against the Islanders, but guess what? Hit a post, hit another post, almost got a goal waved off, missed the wide open net because the puck just happened to bounce over Fisher's stick, and ended the goal on a rebound that went right to Seth Jones, and he missed it and goes in the back of the net. I might have to say that as great as they played that Islanders game, that might be the worst part of it, just because they were so close to winning. And it just stopped.
I mean, the Devils one's a good one, but I kind of think it was actually the game Saturday against the Jets. Because, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I thought, hey, this Islanders game, they lost, but they were working their way out of the funk. And then they come out and they just are terrible. Like, and just, you know, they get tied up and you think they're back in it and they immediately give up that second goal. And just looking, you just kind of like, you know, I just was like, oh well,
here we go
guess
again.
I need to get caught up on this stuff, so I kind of watch the game while I work on this, and that was that.
Mine would be the hit Andrew Ladd put on Cody Franzen in the second period of Saturday's game, because they're down to the Jets. There's just no energy in the building. You know, it's as bad as it gets. And then Franzen gets hurt. He didn't look good. That was not a good looking hit, and no one does anything to Ladd whatsoever. And we've seen it multiple times when you take a headshot on a guy, you know, there's a little fracas afterwards. Gabriel Bork gets slammed into Hutchinson. No one does anything afterwards. Nothing of note. So that to me was, I agree with you. I think that's probably like the lowest point, was just Saturday's game. Just,
yeah, they had a chance to pull themselves up and they didn't do it.
They got too frustrated with the game and just let slip away. All right, on to bigger and brighter things. Tonight, it's no Mike Smith tonight against Phoenix, even though when you're listening to this, chances are the Phoenix game's already been played, so you get to see how right or how wrong we were. This week,
am I reading this? Does NHL.com adapt to your time zone?
I think they do.
Because this game does not start at 10 o'clock, does it?
No, it does.
No,
that's Eastern time.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, my NHL.com did not adjust because I knew 10 o'clock couldn't be right.
All
right.
So
if you do it on your phone, it'll adjust.
There we go.
I am on a 2006 MacBook Pro.
You may be able to hear the fan coming.
What did you get with the times?
Got 55-pound computer upstairs. this week they're at Arizona tonight. They get 2 days off, a rare 2-day off spell against. Then they play San Jose. Then they have Saturday, which is the OTF watch party at Brewhouse South. Who and
I gotta come to that.
Yeah, you
should come to that.
Also, Formula One season starts immediately after the game, so it's going to be a happy Dan, let me tell you. And Sunday, the other half of a back-to-back against the President's Cup trophy-winning Anaheim Ducks. So 4 games.
Why did I relate that, Dan?
on the road. Any predictions as far as record this week?
Yes and no, because I could totally see them losing 10 in a row. I think that they are going to beat the Coyotes tonight. They have to. Like, they have to. I was thinking about it earlier. I saw it on Twitter earlier today at work. If you had said a month ago that the game against the Phoenix Coyotes in the middle of March is going to be a gigantic, huge make-or-break game for the Nashville Predators, people probably would have looked like you farted in church. I mean, but they have to win tonight. They have to, especially because they're going into San Jose, which is a team fighting for their playoff lives. They're probably not going to make it. San Jose hasn't been doing a very good job of stacking points and winning recently, but you know, they're going to be playing like that, like a desperate team who wants to make it into the playoffs. Whereas Arizona is committed to the rebuild. Most of the people you look at on the roster, you have no idea who they are.
Top-line center, Kyle Chipchura.
Top-line wingers are Marty Erat and Shane Doan. I mean, come on. And then I had to look up the goalie that they had. How do you say that? Dominguez? Luis Dominguez?
I think that's right.
Yeah. Luckily, Mike Smith isn't playing, because even though he's had a crappy season, he probably would have shut out the Predators. Anyway, but again, they have to win. And I think that you have this road trip and you can play it and say, okay, guys, blank slate, here we go. We've got inferior opponent. You don't want to play down to them, but they know that they're basement-dwelling teams, so you have to go in with a mindset saying that we are going to beat this team. And you play as hard as you can to beat that team, because if they win, they get off that schneid, and then they go into San Jose with a new outlook, saying, hey, we did it. It's over. Let's go finish this road trip. If they lose to Arizona, then that monkey on their back just gets so much heavier. And they go into a California gauntlet against San Jose, LA, and Anaheim, where both those teams, San Jose and LA, are fighting for their playoff lives. Anaheim is just looking to lock up the President's Trophy, and it just, the hill looks so much steeper than what we're looking at right now. So they absolutely have to win tonight, and I think that they're going to do it.
All right, so the rest of the week you're saying what, 2-1-1, 3-1?
I would say that they would go, I'm saying that they're going to go 2-2 for the week.
2-2. All
right. They're going to go, and they've still got some problems to work out. They're not going to run the tables. But I could see them absolutely swapping back wins, especially depending on what the goaltending situation looks like this weekend. I could absolutely see them winning in Phoenix, going into San Jose, and following up the win against the Coyotes with a terrible effort, and then winning against the Kings and then losing against the Ducks. I could absolutely see that happening. And then coming back home and then starting up on the right foot again.
See, I'm bummed, because I was going to say 2-2 as well. And I was also going to go off book.
We don't have anything to argue about.
But I was going
to
go.
They're going to run the table. They're going to go 4-0. Okay.
I typically go way over optimistic. But here's where I'm going to differ. I think they're going to start and end the road trip with wins. So I think they're going. I think they're going to beat Phoenix. Sorry, Arizona, and they're going to beat the Ducks. I think that's how it's going to go for them. And I normally don't actually call the games, but I just have a feeling, and also I love being the Ducks.
Being the Ducks is fun.
I love watching them lose.
I'm going to go 2-1-1. I think they beat the Coyotes. I think they beat the Sharks. I think they lose, losing a shootout to the Kings. Hutton plays one of the games, and I think they win the other one. So, just because I think the Kings just, they have their number. Big team, pushes them around. So, all right, John, big thanks for joining us tonight on a relatively short notice. Is there anything that you would like to promote other than what I normally promote on the show?
No, so we've got the OTF watch party come down on. It's going to be in Cool Springs, Brewhouse South, about 7:30 on Saturday when the Predators take on the Kings. We're actually going to have some swag that the Predators Foundation loaned us. It's going to be, we've got a Pecorine signed hat, we've got a blank Predators jersey where it's signed by Roman Yossi, and then we've got a Nashville Predators stick that is signed by the entire team. that you can bid on, and all those proceeds will go to the Predators Foundation. And then come hang out with us, drink some beers, yell at the team, and watch them lose because Dan is so insistent that they're not going to win that game.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Link, you got anything before we go?
No, nothing big. I think it's March, which means once JK is back in town, we should be recording a new episode of Almost Analysis, and so hopefully that'll be coming up before not too long, so you can look forward to that.
All right. For John, you can get him on Twitter at you want your personal one, or you want just a side one?
Yeah, we could do both. I don't, pretty much the only thing I have on my personal Twitter is beer related and dog related.
Dog pictures.
So, yeah, we got at Jay Garcia for my personal one. Then we've got at On the Forecheck for the blog, which is where you can see me spitting hot takes and putting up funny gifs that just piss everyone off.
And dogs wearing wigs. You can follow him on Twitter at 3DLink. He's Chris Link from Almost Analysis. You can follow myself at Dan D. Bradley. Also, a big shout out to our friends over at Threaditors, who, like Lazarus, have resurrected. And now actually have some other cool stuff in their store. The pre-sale is running through Friday, so check them out at threaditors.com. We'll be back next week. This has been the Predcast presented by Lions Internet Marketing Solutions. Everyone have a good week, and drink whatever you need to get through it. So we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.